Welcome to this week's episode of Everyday Thin Places. I'm Rachel Gallagher, and I'm an interfaith hospice chaplain.
And I'm Elizabeth Ferrasso, and I'm a birth doula.
And in each episode of Everyday Thin Places, we draw from our experiences supporting birthing people and dying people to explore with honesty, authenticity, and humor how we can all become more truly living people. Welcome to Everyday Thin Places. We are all in for such a treat today. So y'all listeners are going to listen in on a conversation between an author, a reader, and a semi-reader. So I've read like the first 100 pages of this book that we're going to be talking about today. And we're pretty sure that this will be a really enjoyable conversation for everyone, whether you have already read this book, or you're somebody who will never read this book, or you're a future reader of this book. This should be accessible to you, and we're not going to spoil the story. So without further ado, the author we are talking to today is our friend, Rob Bell, who recently published his novel, Where'd You Park Your Spaceship? Welcome back to Everyday Thin Places, Rob.
It's good to be back. Here we are.
Here we are.
So last time we talked to you, we were talking to you about your book, Everything is Spiritual, which in some ways it was a little bit of a departure from what you had done before. It was the first book that was really felt like a memoir of sorts. And so you were talking about yourself and your life. And it's really interesting to me that now we have the chance to talk about a work of fiction and we're going to talk about the actual work and talk hopefully a lot about just your process in this. But what has been really interesting to me is the questions that have come up, and I have 1,000 questions and 1,000 curiosities, so I know we won't get to them all today. I'll think these things and I wonder, is that too personal to ask? So it's so funny to me.
Oh, let's go. Oh, that's where it gets interesting.
Yeah. Oh, good. Well, I'm not going to get to, I'm going to save that my like, really like, is that too personal a question to ask?
Wow. Let's start there. That's the best part.
All right. Well, I'm not going to mess up Rachel's flow because I think Rachel's going to like lay the groundwork for us a little, but you know, I'll pounce on you with that one in a shortly. But I think, so that's not really a question. That's an observation, but it feels like anybody who picks up this book is going to get not just the story, but they're going to get, you know, this picture and this strong impression of who Rob Bell is. So, yeah, Rachel, let me pass it to you to turn that into an actual question, because okay. That was an observation, not a question.
Sure. Yeah. So this is an exciting version of Rob Bell to get to know, because we've heard you share that this is the most you work that you've ever created. And it is so different from your other works that we've already been familiar with. This story is fiction. It's post-apocalyptic sci-fi. But as I've started to immerse myself into this world that you've built, I found myself making notes in my phone of like lines in the story that rang so true and felt so very Rob Bell to me. So I couldn't help but wonder like how much of this story is like an allegory for things that you've experienced, and are there parts of this fiction book that are autobiographical?
That's why it's so enjoyable. I remember handing the first draft was 750 pages. I took a book out of this book, like deleted a book out of this book to. And I remember a friend read 750 pages and said, it was really interesting. And he was like, yeah, I've read your other stuff. It's for your other work. It's great. It's fine. It was helpful, etc. But this is like what it's like to be your friend. That's where I was really, really struck with, it's about these other planets, and there's spaceships. There's a completely different organizational structure for how the universe gets governed. It's just all 100% made up. And yet my friends are like, this is like you. So that's the beauty of this, is any question you ask, I can be like, it's Furtis. I have no idea. And there's something about the subconscious that's so fascinating, because I don't understand what's happening. I mean, I don't understand the story. Where I am or where I'm not, or what's, my mom didn't hit her head. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't live in a group, in a neighborhood of homes burrowed in the side of a hill. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what's so fascinating about it. And that's why it's so fun to talk about it. And like Kristen said, when I would sit at dinner and I'd tell her all about what a character did that day when I was writing it, she's like, literally, all you care about is talking about these characters. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. I'll put this book out and then I'll just... So talking about it with you all is so fun because I'm struck with it. One interviewer literally stopped the interview and he was like, you're talking about these characters like you didn't create them. Because I was like, oh, I love what happens when Hingu bears. Da, 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 da. Mm-hmm.
So that's a concept that like I've been really like immersing myself in lately. I'm working on this creative project and I've talked about it before on our podcast, and I'm having this, my therapist calls it euphoria surrounding this project, because it really just feels like it's all like coming to me. And it just, I mean, I'm not even like, I'm working with a creative team. I'm like the producer of this project. And yet being in the room with the creative team, it's like,
yeah,
this energy, this like this thing that exists, it's amazing. And so reading this, you know, the first hundred pages of this book and hearing you talk about it and hearing your excitement about the characters right now, it feels so similar. And like I said, like I was making notes of lines from the book. And like there's this story within the first 100 pages about Goja and this art project. Mm. And this, it's beautifully descriptive, and it really, like, you really captured like the emotions that come with creating something essentially from scratch, going through that process, trying to bring it to the world, and what that feels like. And so I'm like, is this indicative of what the book has been like for you?
Oh, and she's so bummed because some girl wired a playlist into her dress.
Yes.
Put speakers in her dress. She's like, ah. And he's like,
show.
Yeah, I know her. I know her. You're like, oh, God, this is like high school. This is like junior high. That's funny you say that scene. I hadn't thought about that. That's funny. No, see, if you have a point. So, like, if you see a movie and it's too on the nose, we all roll our eyes. It's too heavy-handed. Oh, I guess we're supposed to be kind to people who have had a tough time. Oh, I guess we're supposed to care for the earth. Whatever it is, if the story is at all after-school special, don't do drugs, kids. We all just are like, oh, God, please.
This again.
So a story at some level only works if there's something about being caught up in a story and it's just pulling you along, and then later you like sort of sort out what it might have meant or not meant. And if the director, storyteller, etc. was at all, we would say, on the nose or so obvious or so like, ugh, please. So with this, the only way it works is just to follow the story. And like partway through, I was like, wow, a bunch of my characters seem to like making speeches. And I had these multiple moments, or when Nord writes a play. And I was like, what's the play called? Oh, it's called What's a Nuka? Wait, I wrote a play and published a play called What's a Nuka? So I was like, there was something about the, I would say, earnest and sincere, how do I do it? So all of the NPR, New York Times, roll your eyes, like, oh, please, Pitchfork. All the cool kids who are like, don't have him write a play that's the name of a play you wrote. I was like, yeah, but that's how I do it. So I kept having to stop and just, yeah, but this is how I do this. So there was something about that was like huge, huge for me personally. Just be like, mm-mm, mm-mm. Just do it how you do it. Doesn't matter.
I wonder if you could, like, even name the breakdown of how much of this felt like you were creating and how much of this felt like you were just channeling. Because you talk about how this started. Mm-hmm. You didn't, like, be like, hey, I should write a novel. What would I make that novel about? You just, your characters, you speak of them as if they, like, appeared to you and revealed themselves to you already having existed in some other plane.
Yes. And that's actually one of the interesting things about, I mean, that's why it's just so, somebody yesterday I was talking to called it the nectar, or like what you're, Rachel, experiencing in the room where something, it's almost like you're interviewing it. Who are you? What are you? How long are you? How big are you? How many pieces do you have? There's an element of, I mean, that's like if you have a kid, who is this kid? What is the life within, latent within this human being? And who does this human being want to be? So the, for sure, that question of like, you get into all these interests, does this already exist somewhere? And it just found an opening into this realm? You get into very, very interesting, mysterious territory. And he, oh, like there's the scene where at the school where Nunez does the, like takes over and does the speech with the bread. Like I was, so that was like, I don't know, 3 days of being in that scene, like watching the scene. I don't, it's like almost like a fugue state or like a, some sort of trance where I'm, what is she? And then what does she do? Oh, she's, I'm like watched following her through the ravine as she's doing this thing. That's like almost like a penultimate scene at the end that I don't even know what that is. And for years, my work was explaining. So for years, my work was, here's the thing. Here's how it breaks down. Here's what it means. Here's the thing I just told you. Here's another way to think about it. Here's an analogy. Here's a metaphor. Here's a example. Here's an illustration. Here's what I just told you. Here's another way for me to explain it to you. So this at some level was like a giant jailbreak, which is fine. That was a lovely life. Great chapter. But like a some sort of lovely jailbreak, because I have no idea why they went to Yorch. Are you asking me? Why would you ask me? Well, because you wrote it. Yeah, but I don't ask. I don't know. That's where it went.
Yeah.
That's where it went.
Well, so speaking of Yorch, there's like, well, last time we talked to you, we talked about this concept of naming. And I don't know that this is your original, if you're the originator of this phrase, but I know we walked away with the phrase that words create worlds. Rachel and I actually, like, we did a whole episode just on naming after that to just think about all the power in naming. Mm. And one of the super interesting things that I observed, experienced about this is that you, on one hand, you just have these totally made up names. Like they're a little bit like, it reminds me of like Star Wars, where you can like, what's my Star Wars name? Like you put in your thing and it gives you some zany name. It sounds like that universe. Yeah. And so you have these, like, we have Furtis and we have these, you know, these names. We have Hingrubears, we have Nunya, and we have these like totally made up. But there's also these words that resonated like they have deep, deep meaning. They're not made up. They're very much connected to communicating something. So I would like to talk about a couple of those. Like the first example was, I noticed when the place that people go,
oh,
if
yeah,
they need medical attention is a thrival.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
And then this is where the Rachel Elizabeth territory is like, we're about to light it up here because I'm so excited to talk about this. One of the things we talked about last time with you was about how we have such an appreciation for centering birth and death in the middle of the human experience and not having it marginalized. And you geographically did that in this story.
Yeah,
in
how
this
every
world.
Circle is arranged. Yeah.
And but you chose the name. Is it the Greek pronunciation? Is it Charis? For where people go,
for
the place.
Sure.
I was hoping that you're going to say yes. I put it so,
that's
and then you chose Mary
is the name
of the place where people go when they give birth, and so these central places of birth and death in the communities that these people live in, we appreciate that so much. But did those names, is that something different than Furtis and Lunley to call them Karis and Mary?
And I love how Heen's like, I don't know why they're called that. Like he's like, I don't know why they call it. I love like Murphy's Law. There's some guy named Murphy who Murphy's Law is if something, I guess, will break at will or go wrong. Like, God, wherever Murphy is, whatever realm or astral plane is Murphy, like, that's what, whatever I did on life, that's what I got. That law about things going wrong. Like, that guy's like, that sucks. So I just loved these vestiges of planet Earth that, no, like, they don't, like, just bits that sort of made it from planet Earth, but have completely lost their origin. No one knows where Murphy's Law, some guy named Murphy, what's that even mean? Well, that's Murphy's Law. So I think that's really, that to me was very interesting. These just little fragments of Earth that are sort of still, because the Mother Mary in our, I mean, from the Beatles to like, Mother Mary has like this archetypal, what's that word? Theotokos, the God bearer. Like now, even 2000 years later in world culture, Mary has this, the sacred feminine, the mother, the speaks at a deep level of something central to the human experience. And somehow on these other planets way in the future, that little fragment sort of somebody somewhere kept that alive. And that to me is really interesting. But yeah, all that, I don't know why. I don't know in the naming, that's part of the subconscious or part of the real wonder and awe of building a world is you're just creating it and then sort of, I'm like you. Why did I name it that? Oh,
I just decided that when I Googled Karis and it's the Spartan Greek name for grace.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's the Hebrew term for goodwill, loving kindness, and favor.
I do remember grace, like it's a grace. Death is like a grace. Mm-hmm. Thinking to as removing it from this idea of tragedy or an end, it's just you're done with this and then you do whatever's next. So it softens, makes it way more a part of things. And you remember that even the sound of Karis just sounds a little like kiss, like a caress. It just is like a, even phonetically, is very different from like dead, the grave.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah, the naming. And then I love it. Like, and then a guy shows up named Bobby Freelance. Mm-hmm. Not a name that's made up. So even part of the joy of it would be like, no, this guy's, it's the guy on the glide who takes him to the space, Wade. Is it Wade? Just randomly have like the most dude name, Texas name, gym teacher name. So even that, you develop a pattern of making up new names for everything. And then all of a sudden I would find myself like, oh no, give this just like a name everybody went to school with. So then then those become to me and are funny because in among all the Ziga Mays and Lanzings, there's just Randy. And then Yun Ye's like, yeah, my Randy talks to me too. She tells him what to do. He's like, wait, your Randy's a she? And then they're like, wait, there's different Randys, but they're different. What? So even the patterns, then as soon as you get in a groove, then you leave the groove and then that becomes its own.
And it's just so fun. I feel like one of the funnest things to do at all as a human is to get to name things.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel knows, our listeners all know, like I take very strong pride and like possession of like naming things in our home. So if there's going to be a pet, if there's going to be a stuffed animal with the children, like I'm like, I have very strong opinions and feelings about what they're going to be named. So it just, I think it's so much fun to just give things a name and let them be something unique. Oh. And so I enjoyed that a lot about this book is just what's the next name going to be? And
I would have,
and then a little surprise or spoiler. We're like, there's a name that you think Borns is like a, is just one of those like made up things. And then you're like, oh, well, maybe it actually meant something. Maybe there's a and reason his name is Borns.
He's Borns. He's like, you know, look, it was Borns since you left. And Heen says it to Borns like, yeah, maybe that's just where it came from. And Borns is just completely shocked. Like, wait, what? How did I never see that? And Heen's like, I don't know. Is it? Oh, that makes me laugh. If you're laughing, if you're making yourself laugh, you're halfway there. No, you're all the way there.
I was cackling. I was like gasping. I was getting teary. I was having all the
feels,
all the fun, good feels,
feeling all the feels.
Yeah. So yeah.
So if we could go back to birth and death again, our listeners have heard me say that before. I'm just wondering, like, and also like going back to the process, did you experience little deaths and little births in the process of bringing this story to life? And would you feel comfortable talking about those?
Well, there was some new kind of joy when I first started seeing the story. I got to the point where there was enough, there were pages of notes and names and maybe this could happen in my clothes closet from just jotting things at night or in the morning when I wake up. And this, God, this is really, I don't know what this is, but it was like touching like a downed power line. It had so much voltage to it. And it had such an innocence and joy. Some guy asked this guy, where'd you park your spaceship? And I could see something structurally within my sense of self about, yeah, that's fine. But like, you have a job you do. There's like a thing you do. There's like a thing that people that you've been doing for a long time, that's what you do. And this feeling of death began to emerge. Like, yeah, but look at the life in this. Look at the joy. Look at what this is. This is like an invitation. And I had fallen surfing. It had been Labor Day 2 years ago. I fell surfing bad and like sliced open my chest. And I was all bruised. And I just like could barely move. I was so I was in so much pain. And I would like sit in this chair. And the story was coming in. I was noticed the story was like growing inside of me. And it was like, well, let's follow this. But I had to die to a number of understandings of what we grasp and cling to these creations, these identities that we've created. Like, well, but I do this. And it's like, well, what if you did that? What if you just followed this? Because right away I was like, oh, this is like multiple books. Oh, this is like a whole world. Well, what if you just gave yourself to it? And I've gone around the world giving people permission slips. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, the thing I do for other people, I need to Rob Bell myself. And I could like feel little bits of cynicism and no, you don't just get to write a whole series of novels about other planets. Like you have stuff you have to do. And it was like, what do I even mean by that? So there was like a profound death, like a good death, like a just let go of all that stuff you have in your head about who you are and what you do. Like what even is a self? What even is an identity? Like, no, it was very, very profound. And I distinctly remember there were days of sitting there, what is this feeling? What is this? And it was like, oh, something's passing. I'm letting go of something. I'm letting go of a sense of who I am and what I do. And even the idea that you do something and you build up a level of skill in it and it helps people, so that's why you do it, can actually cut you off from your heart. So-and-so went to culinary school. So-and-so was trained in whatever. So-and-so has 17 years doing this. And so they're like, yeah, I have all this expertise. And their assumption is So I will obviously roll that expertise. I will continue to use. Maybe not. Maybe the next thing is you start over in a completely different field with a beginner's mind and you just follow that and you humble yourself and you lose your title, your position or your pay or your office or whatever, because the next stage is a rebirth in which you have none of those trappings and you're free and you make less money and you live in a smaller house and you ask tons of questions because you don't know what you're doing and you're more alive than ever. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, we know what you mean.
I just noticed how often at one level, the goal is to find something you can do in the world that you can maybe even be good at, that if it helps others, that's awesome. And I call it the triple. And if you can maybe pay some bills, win. There you go. And so wonderful squad goal. I mean, if your listeners have like, that would be amazing. Awesome. But then that you might do that. And then that might actually be in the way of whatever is next asking for birth. And you're like, well, there's this new thing, but I'm the vice president of whatever. I'm the assistant to the regional manager. I'm really good at this other thing. And I've built up all these skills and I even pay some bills and it helps people. Might actually be the absolute worst reason to do it, because your heart's like, hey, let's drop it. Let's just drop it and go over here. You know what I mean? How fascinating that works. Or even the idea in Western culture of waste. Yes, but I got all this training in that. Or, yes, but I spent this many years climbing to the top in that area. Like, why would I just throw all that out? Maybe that's what's being at. Maybe that, yeah. Yeah. What was that all so that it could be used? Like, is everything so that it could be used? Or any time someone is trying to find their purpose, I'm always like, well, drop it. Like, that's the problem right there. You won't find it, your purpose, by trying to find your purpose. You will be present to your life. Your mind will be clear, and something will invite you into it. And later, perhaps, maybe you'd be like, oh, I wonder if maybe. But you won't get there that way. It's a very deep, mysterious way it works. It's actually not that mysterious. But so lots of deaths, or like one giant death, or, oh, yeah.
That resonates. I'm sure, Elizabeth, that resonates with you too. I happen to know that, like, in addition to this being a conversation between an author, a reader, and a semi-reader, this is also a conversation between three similar personalities. So for lack of this is the easiest way to describe it. Like, Elizabeth and I are both sevens on the Enneagram. And we see those characteristics in you as well.
What?
And
what? Can you believe we like produce a podcast? Like, we meet deadlines. It's amazing.
Most of the time.
Sometimes, yeah.
But we both struggle, and we talk about, you know, is our ego getting in the way? Like, because we're feeling this call to something new or this exciting thing. And we know this to be true. Like, we lived with ourselves long enough to know that, like, we let things die over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And, like, being self-conscious about that and, like, thinking about what the world is going to say. Like, oh, you let that one go. What's next?
Yeah.
Or the piles of excessive, like, here's all my unfinished projects around me. Like, talk about waste, like Enneagram Sevens. We can produce some waste.
Oh, interesting. A long time ago, was like, if you're going to write 10 good songs for an album, you probably need to write 100. So the creative process itself, to me, life itself, became you just keep making things, you just keep taking steps, and then out of all of that, somewhere along the way, I got rid of my edit button.
Good.
So maybe that's what you're talking about with the seven. I didn't see it as, no, I just saw it as part of it. Like, there's a bunch of like plays and books in my computer right here that'll never see the light of day because they're rubbish. And that tells me I'm on the right track.
Hmm.
And I don't see them as like, oh, I couldn't finish it. No, that's how it works. You throw lots of things against the wall. And also, it's also interesting. That's what you just said was really fascinating. I generally don't talk about what I'm working on. I think that's what you're getting at. The person who's endlessly telling everybody what they're working on. So then everybody is like, whatever happened to that? Yeah, that didn't work out. So I somewhere along the way, I was like, oh, like publicly, I wouldn't talk about what I'm working on.
And then
for that very reason.
So surprised that Rob Bell just released this big book of fiction.
Yes. Yeah. Because otherwise you're somebody who's always, maybe like I'm writing a play, and today, this afternoon, I'm going to read the opening scenes to a friend. Like, it'll just be pure joy because no one has seen the play. And we'll just have Friday happy hour, and it'll be so fun. But if I was always like, hey, everybody, just working on a play, people are going to happen to that. It'd be much, much better just to say, where'd you park your spaceship? Comes out next week. Been working on it for 2 years. So I think that's probably some, I can imagine for some folks, the people around them are like, just finish one thing, please. Because we've heard so many things you were going to do. And after a while, you become suspicious of, does this person talk about this so they don't actually have to do it? So then I think for me, somewhere that, because the seven, whatever the seven wound, glitch, hiccup was like, just don't be that, the person who's got so many, or this one, I'll meet somebody who's like, God, I'm just an idea. I'm like you, Rob. I just have so many ideas. I just have tons of ideas. And I always 100% of the time to know the person's going to say, but I can't seem to finish one. And I'll be, and they'll be like, but I can't seem to finish one. And I'll be like, okay. But when I ask them which one's the farthest along, they always have one that's the farthest along. It's like, okay, finish it. That's how you rescue yourself from yourself. Otherwise, you're just walking around talking about how your ideas person. Not interesting. An ideas person's not interesting. Somebody who's like, I finished a draft. It's crap, but it's a first draft and I finished it. Excellent. Excellent. That's how you rescue yourself from other. I just have so many ideas. No. Yeah, who doesn't? What? Not impressive. I have no resonance with that. I'm like you, I have so many ideas. No, I don't want to be like that. I actually finished a crappy first draft. Oh, interesting. Okay.
Well, and I think that like, leap of faith that you've taken to say like, well, I'm going to publish this book. You talk about the triple. I think one of the hardest things is like if the making money off of it thing isn't there, sometimes it's really hard to like make things happen, or it's just really scary to try to like walk through with like, I love this. I think this is good for the world. I feel alive when I do this. Am I going to bankrupt myself?
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so that's where the, like, I see the seven of, like, I have sunk so much in this. Like, we got to tell people so we can make it work, so we can justify the fact that, like, I just lost a sad amount of money saying I was going to be a candle maker. And now I have 50 pounds of fragrance oil in my basement.
Hypothetically speaking, and of course.
Hypothetically speaking.
Yeah. No, that's all. I mean, yeah. That's all part of it. Absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
You have spoken peace into me. The mantra in my head is often, don't be too precious. I hear Rob Bell saying, don't be too precious. And this is another plug for another thing you did that's not fiction, but the Find Me a Straight River.
Oh, right.
Audiobook
was
a lifeline for that place when you're like, I'm not very productive. I should be farther along. And what a gift.
Yeah.
So besides, we want everybody to grab this book and read Where'd You Park Your Spaceship? I would love to get that plug for Find Me a Straight River, because that was a lifeline. All right. You ready for my ambush, very personal question? I don't know if it's very personal. You might be like, yeah, no big deal.
Yeah.
You referenced, we think about the death of this one thing and a birth of something new. You referenced, I think, on your podcast that you had a backyard ritual that sort of marked this. And I'm super curious about, we just love the idea of ritual and how it adds to life. I would love to hear whatever you're willing to talk about of like what that ritual was, what you did, what it meant, how that works for you.
I had to, how would I say it? I I came to this realization that I had grown up in, I was born into this family that went to church. There was this Christian tradition that was like very, very, very important to my family and extended family. And I grew up, what is this? What are we doing here? And I realize now, and I was always deeply compelled by Jesus. But the whole larger thing, I almost for the first time, I could see that the work that I did, how personal it was. It was like way more personal than I ever realized. I was trying to make sense of where I came from. So Bible, God, Jesus, church, etc. What is this? And this, and what's good in this? And what needs to be left behind? What isn't? What needs to be left behind? And that particular parsing, like pulling up, separating of babies and bathwaters. Like, what about, like, it had like this intellectual dimension. It had like this textual, like the Bible, like, okay, here's what's happening in this verse. Here's the Hebrew, here's the Greek. Like for years, and I would like in multiple ways, like, wait, this thing that's been written off. No, there's some really interesting stuff here. There's, like, when people talk about social justice, yeah, the Hebrew prophets, people, you know, like, there was all of this, like, rescuing babies from bathwater, but for it was like this moment of, oh, there was a microphone, and there was an audience, and there was typing books, but it was actually very, very, very personal. I was trying to understand my own origins. And there was something about, I did that. Like, if you'd like a resurrection sermon, there's probably 20 on the interweb. There was something about coming to the end of a thing I'd been doing, which doesn't mean growth, expansion, evolution, whatever. It just means there was something about that specific work. And a friend of mine, we were talking about it, and he was like, oh yeah, like a scribe is like a role. Like the person who interprets the ancient text. Lots of cultures have had this. It's like a job certain person does. They say this as opposed to this. Like that part, that very, which was what I was doing. And we were laughing and it was fun and there was visuals. And it was, but at its heart, it was actually an ancient role somebody does for the community. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And there was something about that moment and of, oh, I'd like to do something else now. That was a great life. There was some deep setting down, even within, as much within me as anything. Yeah. So there were some personal items involved, and it might have been a candle, or, yeah, there was, but it was just marking, what a great chapter. Yeah, and I don't even at this level kind of know what it, some, like even what you're saying about a ritual, you kind of know what's going on, you kind of don't. Like when you like go into a cathedral and you light a candle for someone, I'm sending them love, I'm directing my intentions towards them, I'm wishing them the best of the universe, I'm asking for somebody somewhere to get them a new car. What was happening here? Other than we just know something's happening, something within me is opened up and connected, and there's some sort of love flowing from me to them. And it's like the power of it is you kind of understand what's going on and you kind of not. But I just knew there was some like mark this moment. And this book was, it was like this book was going, let's just do a new chapter, literally a book, but also like you don't have to carry that around if you don't want to. It was great. You traveled around. It was great. What a great life. What a great, great 30-year chapter. Now you want to do something else? Like you don't have to explain anymore if you don't want. And that's actually part of the heart of it. You've been explaining for so long. How about you just weave a bonkers tale of all these, just go for it. Just make it as wide and weird and Bobby Freelance, born in Peebles, Furtis Yorch. You know what I mean? It was like a permission giving, marking, end of a chapter, birth of something new. You have no idea how you'll pay the bills. You have no idea if this will mean anything to anybody. you have no idea, but you do know that you're done doing a thing.
Yeah. And you use the word like explain. Like explain just feels so heavy.
Yeah.
Like, that feels like it's a heaviness. And to like take off the role of explaining and just to play with story is
like
delightful.
Like I remember after 9/11, I was a pastor. And the Sunday after 9/11, I gave a sermon about the danger of getting revenge. And you could already see that the American government was going to do a we'll get them back. And you could already see there was going to be a war. And you already see it was going to be the dumbest war ever. like you just saw, oh my God, this is going to have generational. But the nature of the work that I did is everybody at the funeral home was grieving, but I'm figuring out how to organize the funeral service. So the nature of the work is everybody else is feeling the feels, and you're organizing or speaking or explaining or something. I talk about it like being a civilian now. It was just like, that was great. Now let's do something else.
So I wonder if, like, it really struck me this, your term of like parsing babies from bathwater. It really resonates with my experience of like choosing to leave religion despite some of the really good and beautiful parts and people that taught me those things. And a sense of humor, like guilt of like a baby in a bathwater. We can't help throw out a baby. But my experience on the other side of that has been so good to have left behind the like work of like, where's the baby? Where's the bathwater? So I just wonder if like you're in this world that you've created, and when you hang out there and when you write and when you share and when you talk about it, do you just feel like you're like up to your eyeballs in babies? Like there's just so many babies that like,
well,
we don't even notice the bathwater. What is the babies in bathwater feel like today?
Well, what's fascinating is when I asked a couple friends, people I knew around where I live, hey, would you read this for me? I just finished this first draft. And like I would go over to talk about their experience. We were instantly into political structures and economics and ecology and grief and loss and like we were instantly into all the stuff about this, something about just a whole made up thing. The discussions were so about the nature of creation and just the most, the one thing discussions weren't was fantasy or conceptual discourses on things. Mm-hmm. It was all about this world, this place, how we live in it, how we relate to each other, how we deal with grief when we're numb. And it's actually, I never even thought about this. I wrote a book called Love Wins, which was kind of about heaven, was mostly about heaven and hell. And what was fascinating when I was out doing interviews for that book, that would have been 12 years ago, is how conceptual the interviews and discussions were in that book. And I remember being on Fox News. I just said that sentence. I remember being on Fox News. I remember being in all these different settings, especially with religious people. And it was like, when we die, what about Hitler? And being like, no. The point of my book is heaven and hell as present states of consciousness that create particular kind of world here and now. And like religious people, those discussions just blanked. Like, yes, but how does a person leave this place and go to heaven? Like an incapacity. I was like, no, I'm talking about now. I'm talking about how this world gets made and how we live in this world and the hells on earth that we create all the time within ourselves, let alone around us. You know what I mean? So what's fascinating is you write a literal, straight, explaining, straight down the middle book about that. And for so many people to try and argue essentially that it's not a conceptual about how you have your furniture arranged in your head for so many people. Like, what do you believe? Where does that get you? When or where? But then to write an actual fantasy or made up book about sometime in the future that's just cooked up in my head, that actually leads to discussions about people without homes and mental illness and how governments, you know what I mean? I never thought about it that way. That's really funny. The book. So funny. Yeah, who knew? Who knew it's that upside down?
And if you set out to do that, like, you couldn't make that happen if you tried. Like,
oh, it's... Can you imagine if the book was, like, an introduction to a healthy ecology? Oh, wow, Rob. Mm. You really grabbed me. Yeah. Please tell me my 17-point plan. Mm-hmm. But then the earth didn't make it. It turned brown. And we're in. That's all. And we're in. Yeah. And we're in. Everybody has this poster of the brown ball in their house. This is a reminder of what happens when you don't take care of things. Oh, my God. There. We're already there.
Yeah. And it's not bossy. I think that's what I appreciated about it, is I feel a lot of the tension of, like, and I'm not going to spoil where this book goes, but, like, there's some things that are really beautiful. And, like, oh, if we were living like that now, we would not brown ball this earth that we're on.
Yeah.
And there's some other things that I'm like, I felt some rub about, where I'm like,
right.
When somebody met plastic for the first time, and I'm like, oh, because plastic's so toxic, and, like, plastic is a metaphor for, like, all that's bad. And I was like, oh, but, like, plastic helmets, like, save people's lives, right. And like, and plastic things.
And I loved it. Heen's like, yeah, it was made of something, I don't know, I think they called it plastic. Like, he's like, huh, wonder what that, it's like the world is made of plastic. And at that point, he's like, huh, I don't know what that was.
And I think that's what's exciting about seeing where this goes, is, like, this is just sort of an introduction to all of the complexity and the delicacy of, like, what if you ruined it all? And you could rebuild it.
Yeah.
What would you get right? Yeah. And what might you, like, overshoot?
Yeah, and there's this really interesting thing about the thing that the terror right now is the earth won't make it. A very legitimate terror. There is no planet B, etc. We're feeling that. So what was really compelling to me was to take that fear and possible worst case scenario and just play it out and move way past it.
Yeah.
As like an exercise. Like, Elizabeth, you were at that 2 day in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Right. There was one of them, I don't know if you're at the one where there was a woman who you could see that there was a truth that needed to be, there was a truth that was like right below the surface that was just eating her alive. And I was like, you could say it. She was like, wait, what? And you can just say it. It might be really powerful to say it, because she was talking about a significant relationship in her life. And so there was like this moment when she was like, oh, my marriage might not survive this. And you could tell it was her absolute worst fear. And she spoke it out loud. And you could watch it lose its terrorism in her life. And so I've just noticed there are these things where we're like, I would never, that's like my absolute worst, can't even be spoken. But the moment you speak it, oftentimes the imagination of new ways to handle it, see it, approach it, fix it, whatever, come about. But the terrible thing has to be said. Even the if you have children, your children's autonomy to make whatever choices they want, even the most possible destructive choices, they are free to do that. Like, you speak the thing that is your worst fear about your child, and you weirdly discover how much, like, almost like secret power or hidden power it had over you. Yeah. My kid could make any sorts of decisions they want about their life. So that part of the power of it for me was, just make that the premise. And notice how it like it helps me keep all of what we're feeling now. I just noticed it was working very personally for me. It helped me reframe what we're feeling now. Yes, take care of this.
Have you at least once upon a time watched the movie Interstellar?
I just watched it recently with my daughter, like three months ago.
Yeah. I watched it with my son, and I was like, I loved that he got captivated and sat there and watched the whole thing with me.
Yes. Yeah. I just watched it with my daughter.
A lot of that same, like, just feelings of terror and delight that I felt in that movie, or it's what I experienced with this novel.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
So there's lots of homework. People can get this book and read it. We heard from another podcast interview that you're having some of Rachel's same noise interference in your zone. And so maybe the audiobook is there a date for the audiobook to come out, or are we still?
Yeah, I think it's a month away.
Waiting until you can complete that.
No, it's done.
Good. I've been refreshing Audible quite often because I'm a mom of four. And so I've been waiting for the audiobook.
It is done. I heard the final. I just double checked all the stuff. So it's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
So I don't know what month this is, soon.
Probably very soon from when we put this out there. So people can pick up the book, or they can enjoy the audiobook. They could watch Interstellar and weave those two together. But I think the best part about this is this feels like one big to be continued for us.
Oh, good.
As a podcast of, like, we just insist that when the next book comes out, we do this fun thing all over again, because we just enjoy you so much. But the to be continued is, like, I think I told you this when I reached out by email, that, like, when I got to the last 10 pages, I was reading on Kindle, and so I could see, like, the percentage going down. I took all day to finish it because I didn't want it to be over. I wanted to be where they were with those people in the final 10 pages, and I didn't want to leave them. And because I knew that this was just book one, I was like, okay. Talked myself into, like, I can let this go because there's more coming. But I'm not a fiction reader. I've never read any of the Harry Potter books, but I feel like I kind of understand the people that were like, get in line at the bookstore the night before, because I'm so excited to see more of where the story goes and to dig deeper with. I can't wait for a whole Dil Todd book, because I just adore him. And I was almost annoyed at Heen for being annoyed with Dil Todd, because he's a treasure.
I love him so much.
Dil Todd for president. I don't know. but we just feel so grateful for this story that you have channeled and created, and the reflection of, like, you, if your friends who you hang out with for fun say this is what it feels like to be your friends, like, it's so beautiful that we get to feel like we're your friends in doing this. So we hope everybody gets in on this. But we wanna pick up with You Are Friends next time.
Good.
Next time, this next series, book in the series,
you got it,
is released, because this is just such a delight. We're so grateful.
You got it.
Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, that's so fun. Awesome. So fun.
Okay. So, to be continued.
To be continued. A Dil Todd bow.
Awesome. I love it. I love it.
Thanks for joining us. Now it's our turn to hear from you. So would you do us a big favor and go into your podcast app and rate us? Even better, would you write us a glowing review? That will help other listeners to find us. And make sure to subscribe so that you don't miss a single episode.
You can also visit our website at everydaythinplaces.com, where you will find all sorts of fun and interesting information, as well as learn about how you can help to support this podcast and earn special exclusive perks. There you will also find links to follow us on social media, or else just pop directly over to Instagram or Facebook, where you will find us at Everyday Thin Places. Thanks so much for joining us today. Until next time, I'm Elizabeth.
And I'm Rachel.
Bye.